elevate. Seamus Fox.
Hi guys, and welcome to episode 13 of the Elevate podcast. I am here with Seamus Fox as usual, and today we have Rory Stewart on, who is a therapist living in London currently, but resided in Derry, and a good friend of mine, actually here with his partner Lisa. And today we're going to talk about all things couple related and relationship related, really, and self-esteem. We'll start off with a quick introduction to Rory and what Rory's kind of all about, and maybe a bit about his background. So, Rory, take it away.
So, I am Rory Stewart, also known as Happy Hole. Basically, what I do is I'm a relationship therapist. I focus on individuals and couples' self-esteem. I try to create better patterns of coping, improve their communication, and help empower them to make better choices in their life. I have a lot of information on my social media regarding like couples therapy and stuff like that.
So where did this all start? Because Rory comes from, just a wee bit of knowledge or a bit of background, Rory comes from actually a personal training background, and he was massive into health and fitness. Started off kickboxing, believe it or not.
Kickboxing.
Punching people and kicking people in the head.
Kicking people in the
head. And now he's like sorting people's heads out.
Well, this is that. You know yourself, with personal training and stuff too, you do kind of develop a very good relationship with the people that you're working with. And then when you've got that kind of relationship established, people confide a lot on you, they open up, especially if they feel like they can be vulnerable with you.
Yeah.
So in that kind of capacity, I kind of found that a lot of the people that I was working with personal training, they were taking a lot more away from that relationship than the physical aspect of it. You know, they could get into great shape, but it was like they might unload some stuff that was going on with them that they were struggling with.
And so you were just, again, Rory was obviously well equipped to deal with this, because when did you start counselling, or when did you get into that?
Because
that was before personal training came along.
Long kind of journey with a lot of different things. Like, so I had my psychology background. I done my degree in psychology, and then after I finished that, I kind of had a wee stint at teaching. So I was on the college teaching for a few weeks, and then I didn't want to follow that through. I just knew it wasn't for me, and then around about that time then I got into cognitive behavioural therapy. So I'd done cognitive behavioural therapy at postgraduate level, and I took a wee break. Then after that, I'd been volunteering for about 2-3 years on a self-harm charity in the town. Took a wee bit of time for myself, and that was what kind of brought me into personal training. So it was just something completely different.
Because
I've been years studying at it, like, so I just wanted the break. And then from there, I think it was when I was in Dubai, just the whole saturation and the gym culture and how it was affecting people with their relationship with food and their confidence. And even, I suppose, in my own kind of experience, when you get into great shape or stage shape, you know, yourself, you don't have a concept of what normal is anymore.
No.
So for me, that was something I struggled a lot with, and I've seen that with clients. And then that kind of led me then into the family therapy, the individual couples and family therapy, which I think personally it came to me at a very good time when I needed it.
Yeah.
But what I took away from it was much, much more. So like, the model itself is really hugely successful in Canada. Yeah. It's not taught around the world. Like, they have a very high success rate. And from what I found with the self-awareness that I've got out, being put through the model itself, it was 100% worth it. Like, even putting clients through it, you can see just when everything starts to click, they see where they've had themselves stuck. Whereas in some models, you could be in sessions for 6 months to a year and might not feel like you've made any kind of degree of progress. But with this model, it's very experiential.
Yeah.
You know, they learn very quickly what needs to change in order to raise their self-esteem, whether it's to get out of a relationship, to set boundaries with people, or just to even not be enmeshed with their family.
Yeah.
Do you know, some people don't ever really separate from their parents. They can't have that boundary. There's still that parent-child relationship. They don't see each other as two adults. Yeah. Which is very important. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And as you say, I think a big thing is raising awareness. People 100% just aren't aware of the patterns they're repeating.
No,
exactly.
No, just going back to the fact that you started personal training, like, was there a reason why you didn't go into the counselling on a one-to-one basis when you were in there?
Probably confidence. I would say confidence. I've been volunteering for a long time.
Would there be a lot of paid work in there for counselling? Like, would you...
Paid work? Like, I think there's paid work anywhere.
Yeah.
It's like, I think if you went out on your own, Aye, there would be sure. There's like a lot of great counsellors in the town. There's a lot of great services in the town. But as you know yourself, even with like teaching and stuff, it's getting your foot in the door.
Mm. Yeah.
To get a start. And then like there's huge amounts of waiting lists. So most of the services are kind of, they have to have so much funding available for them. So like you might only get 6 sessions with a therapist in the town and a service after maybe waiting 6 months. And you might have everything resolved in 6 sessions. And it's not the service's fault, but it's just the state of where everything is at the minute. So some people are kind of like, right, well, I really need this, but they might not necessarily have the funds there to be able to pay for the therapy that they needed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or they mightn't even know what type of therapy that they need.
Mm.
They mightn't have a full like grasp on what the actual core issue is for them.
So would you say that that's the difference between somewhere like, because Rory now lives in London. He's actually moved around the world. They've been doing leases here as well, by the way. Just they're both been traveling a lot, lived in Dubai, now
Thailand as well,
in Thailand, and now happy living in London. So have you seen changes in when you've changed kind of geographical area,
like
in terms
cultures,
of services,
cultures,
well, cultures and maybe the services that are there for the
services? Big time. I don't like want to be knocking anywhere, like, but like in Dubai, for example, it's a very, very full-on culture, so there's a lot of working professionals that are there, and it's also very, very expensive. So, like, you mightn't have access to certain types of therapy, but you might have to pay above and beyond what you'd expect. Like, you might have to pay maybe £200-£250 an hour to go see somebody, and then you have to pay for your medication and stuff on top of that if you need it. Whereas in this part of the world, we can get our medication in the NHS, and then we can put ourselves forward in a waiting list. Or if we have the money there, we can pay and go and see a counsellor. Like, but again, you've no access, you've no real control over who you're going to be assigned in terms of your therapist and stuff like that. Whereas in London, like, there's so much out there in terms of like access to services. Even like for, I was saying to you, like if you take somebody with a really kind of debilitating psychiatric condition, if the resources aren't here, they don't get access to that therapy if it's not available, if the funding's not there for them.
Yeah.
So maybe somebody that has a really debilitating condition that needs a specific type of therapy, they might not get it. And that's just the way it is. Mm. Whereas in other parts of the world, I was saying to you, like Canada, they pay on an insurance policy and then they might get access to a psychiatrist. Their family might get access to the actual training so that they can help the person cope much better.
Mm.
So you're not just on your own with everything that's going on.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying, there's a lot of specialists in London and here in the city, we don't have it. So what if you do have that type
probably,
of...
It probably goes hand in hand with such the problems that are here in the city with people's mental health.
So isn't that really what if they do have that debilitating illness?
Depends. Again, I'm not going to single on any kind of one thing. And to be fair, it's not knocking the services in the town. It's just there's so much that needs to be addressed and there's just probably a severe lack of funding and services that's there.
Mm.
Like, you've been to the hospital the weekend, you know what it's like. So you can imagine for like the community mental health team, for people that are looking or waiting for access to services and get very desperate for them.
Yeah.
And that's before you factor in anything else that's going on with their lifestyle, their family life, how they're coping, with using drugs, drink, alcohol, what's their relationship stressors like, all that kind of stuff that's going on. But if you're like taking like a very, very full on psychiatric condition, like there would be certain prescribed therapies that would help more than others, maybe.
Yeah.
We might put it that way, but you mightn't have the access to it, but there mightn't be somebody in the area that's trained in that type of counselling. Like.
And would it lead to them maybe getting prescribed the wrong type of counsellor, which ends up them in a worse condition than
I
how they started out?
I don't think you would be worse off, I think. Like, in terms of counselling and stuff, talking about where you're at is going to be helpful. But again, I think it would be like, how would I put it? If you were just assigned a personal trainer, right? You would have no control over whether or not you're going to take this boy on or you're going to like this boy or this boy's going to even fully get where you're at. Whereas if you're in control of who you're going to and what you know of this person,
you're going to
you
pick
might be
what
more
he specializes
motivated in that respect. Do you know what I'm saying?
So you could be looking to be a bodybuilder and you go to a strength and conditioning coach, that
or,
type of aspect.
You could be doing CrossFit and you wouldn't know any different. You didn't know. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, but I think what people's concept of therapy might be is it's just kind of intimidating for them. For some people, so they don't know what they expect when they go in the door. And I think for the therapist too, you can't be all things to all people.
That's right.
You know, so if I see my limitations and what I can do for this person, then I have to get my ego out of the way and refer them to somebody that can help them. Or as a client, if they're coming in and I know I can't help them, then I have to do my best to make sure they get access to the help that they need.
And you're now specialising in
mainly
couples therapy.
Couples and well, on an individual level, I'm focusing on self-esteem, but a lot of what they're presenting with is issues within the relationship. But it could be with the family, it could be with
Like,
but do you feel that a lot of those issues within the relationship is coming back to that person anyway? No, it's not. It's maybe not the two of them
as a couple,
but it's individual. Their own individual insecurities that kind
of
come out during the relationship.
How I would kind of look at it, like if you take a relationship like a dance, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing the tango and your partner's slow dancing, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But again, if you're maybe the more dominant of the partner, right, and you're always getting your way, but it's your partner that's reached out for help,
yeah,
and you're not fully aware of what needs to change, and she needs to become more assertive, then in this situation, you're in a one-up, and she's in a one-down. So in order for that to happen, there has to be work with both of them so that you give up some of your power,
yeah,
and she's able to get up and be treated like an equal. So that might mean she has to start setting boundaries, she has to speak up for herself, and she has to show that there's consequences to certain behaviours.
Yeah.
And also for maybe the person that was in the one-up position, they have to work on themselves so they're not maybe going to a place of blame or domineering or controlling or whatever it is.
And do you feel that most people aren't even willing to get that stage where they're willing to go and ask for help or ask to even speak? Because a lot of people don't. A lot of people, when it comes to relationships, just like a normal person who's looking for help, they don't actually go and seek it. And then all of a sudden, that relationship that could have been 10 times better ends up splitting apart.
Some people might go two or three relationships before they realise that they're the common denominator.
Yeah.
Or else maybe they're attracting a partner that's like the same traits as on the partners that they want out with. Might miss. People sometimes get hung up on the physicality of the partners that they're with.
Yeah.
That's the traits.
Yeah.
And the commonality might be how they're coping, not how the partner's behaving.
Yeah.
So it's like you could go...
It's like somebody looking to lose weight and they go around every personal trainer in every gym in the town.
Aye.
And not realising it's them.
It's them that has to be accountable. Yeah. Yeah. Aye. But again, if you're going out with somebody that's maybe very confident, very strong, very assertive, you might be attracted to them traits. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if they then turn on you, not turn on you, it sounds a bit kind of sinister, but if they always get their way and you become frustrated and resentful, well, you know what has to fucking change. You have to start speaking up for yourself. You have to start setting that boundary. You have to start putting yourself first.
Mm.
But it's very overwhelming.
Yeah.
And especially if you have a partner that can... hit them insecurities, or maybe make you feel like if you're putting yourself first, you're selfish or you're self-absorbed or you're whatever, and that can also veer into the more damaging and toxic relationships that people find themselves in, and they become trapped and isolated and overwhelmed, you know. And I get a lot of that as well.
Would you maybe get, because I know I've dealt with couples in the past and you've probably dealt with couples just in training them, do you maybe get one person out of the couple that wants that change and really wants to come and see
there's
you?
There's always one that comes and the other one's dragged.
The other one's dragged. You know what I mean? That's what I was going to say. And obviously that makes it more difficult to work with a person that's dragged in, unless you can kind of change their mindset.
The main thing in a lot of ways is communication.
Aye.
Communication is not, it's not a sexy concept. People think a couple's therapy, like it's going to be like fucking an eat, pray, love retreat or something like that. And it's not.
Mm.
You know, you have to start looking at the pattern of behavior that's keeping both people stuck.
Yeah.
The difficult thing is if one person refuses to engage or refuses to change, and then on that level, if I'm working with another person, it's like, well, what can you control? This is how you want to live your life going forward. Do you want to always be letting this person dictate the way things is going to be?
Yeah.
You know, is your happiness not important within the relationship as well?
Yeah.
And then
that,
obviously
is that just a fear aspect of that person being afraid to break down their own?
Most people are afraid to be on their own. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Would you rather be in an unhappy relationship, right, for the sake of how you look to your peers?
Yeah.
Or would you be afraid of being in your own and maybe not having anybody else?
Yeah.
Or would you rather just stay in that unhappy relationship just because it's what you know?
Mm.
Because I've been there 10 years.
Yeah.
Why would I leave? Or
it's a comfort zone even within relationships where people know what they're getting. They just get used to that environment. They get used to breaking out of that's just completely hard.
You touched upon even parents there just at the very start of this, and I suppose they are our first role model and they're our biggest.
One of your first templates. But then, don't get me wrong, you can learn a lot from the family of origin, like so much.
Mm.
But I mean, if we were even to look at like very, very toxic relationships, somebody can completely blindside you as well. You can find yourself on that through no fault of your own.
Yeah.
And that can come from a place of compassion. You might just want to give so much to this person.
Mm.
And doing that, you forget yourself in the process.
Mm.
And when that person starts manipulating the behavior, you can find yourself in a really fucking dangerous, damaging environment. Yeah. And that might have nothing to do with your family of origin.
Yeah.
In some respects, like you could look at maybe how your parents resolve conflict, maybe how if one of them was a people pleaser, for example, you could have adopted that behavior going into that relationship, and you trying to endear yourself to the other person, you forget your own boundaries.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I feel like that's me.
We all can kind of do, but genetically, I think maybe some of their traits.
Like, but then a lot of it is environment, like how we grew up and what we see and what our perception of the world is and what our perception of relationships are. And then when those two clash within each other, it's...
And, like, you take your partner. You have two very different families of origin. Mm-hmm. You have very different expectations and values to her.
Yeah.
And her template of her parents' family and your template of your family is going to be very different.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, if both people haven't really kind of met in that level where they've been very open about what they expect and what they value between each other... Then when you get together and you start having children, that's when the big clashes can start happening, because then you've got two different parenting models. Do you know what I mean? And then you might unconsciously start moving into a different role. You might adopt your father's behaviour or your mother's behaviour, and she might have a very different template in mind. Do you know what I mean? And then the two of you are going at it.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you can see that even within my own relationship, my own marriage. No.
Do you want to talk about it? What's happening?
Let's not go there. But Emma's way would be completely different from
Emma's
way
is wrong.
Of course it's wrong.
Is that what you're saying?
My way is the way. But no, you can see that. Like, you can see how it causes friction. Of course it causes friction, because you shouldn't have said that to her. You don't be just there.
Look at the body language.
Exactly. No, you know what I mean? So you shouldn't be saying that. And it's not been. Of course, but it causes friction within marriages and relationships.
But this is the thing again.
But then you try and conform.
This is the thing about communication again. And what I'm looking to do with them, self awareness. So there now, you went, you shouldn't. No, I'm famous fat, and my finger's pointed, so it's blame. Yeah. I'm automatically blaming. So if I get into an argument, say I get into an argument with Lisa, and maybe I feel like I'm justified, whether or not that's the case, I've already went to blame, so she's at fault.
Yeah.
Now, if she's sitting looking at me, I'm pointing the finger, she's going to be defensive automatically anyway,
because
it sounds like she's being attacked.
Exactly.
Now, tone, body language, facial features, what you're actually saying, am I taking any accountability for what I have or haven't done in this situation? Yeah. Am I looking at this from every angle?
Yeah.
You know, is there a way I could speak to her that would maybe resolve this without me getting me back up?
Even am like I, you, your we, or like even the difference in...
I'm leading from a place of I and not a place of you, when I go to a place of you, you're at fault, you're to blame, you're the person that I'm projecting this on. Whereas if I'm leading from a place of I, like if you've done something to annoy me, right, and I go, you're a fucking arsehole, you know, why did you do that? Instead of going, look, hey, I'm really kind of hurt that this happened earlier. I think if you maybe had approached this in a different way, I would feel a wee bit more positive about this or whatever it is. You'd be listening to that and you'd be like, fuck, I can't believe I've done that. Whereas if I go, you're a fucking dickhead, right? You'd be like, hey, hold on a minute. And then you would start, because you get on the defensive. But that's even just language. But look again, body language, your tone, how you standing, you facing them, you tense.
So is that everything. What you get them to do then? Question that?
Maybe they try and look at everything. Even. And it's not easy. Hey, like, I mean, if I'm working with somebody that's maybe a chronic placator or people pleaser, you know, even make an eye contact. And if they have a partner that's very domineering, very forceful, if they get aggressive, know that they can intimidate them. You can imagine, hey, that's very, very intimidating for that person to speak up and even go, do you know what? Look, you're just not on. I can't hack this anymore. Yeah. And even they set that boundary. The problem being, if you attempt to set that boundary and don't follow through, what incentive is that person to change? Do you know, and that's the big thing for people, because they might say 9 times out of 10, you know, I'm fucking leaving. I'm leaving if you do this again. But that's happened 9 times and they haven't done it.
They haven't done it.
So Mickey's sitting there and he's like, That's not happening.
Do you work with people that don't actually know that they're that person? Like, so they just, it's not like they're trying to be the kind of dominant one, but they just...
I think a lot of people on a lot of levels know that there's stuff that has to change. And it's not easy to be like, I feel like I can't. If this person gets under my skin, they intimidate me, they scare me, or maybe it's a case of... the person can maybe get them to doubt their ability or doubt their intelligence, or maybe they just don't feel like they could cope on their own, or they're afraid of the person walking out. And this is the other thing. If the person knows that you'll crumble when they threaten to leave, or that they know that if you threaten to leave, you'll always come back, they've got all the power in the relationship. They know themselves. They're like, I, there's nothing that I can do that she's going to walk out, or he is going to leave me. Like,
And what do you feel that is the breaking point when they do? I love that quote by Jim Rohn, no, it's either inspiration or desperation. Yeah. You get that stage where it's just like, enough's enough.
I think everybody's got a different deal breaker for them.
Yeah.
Some people can get cheated on years and years and years, and they're just like, that's part of the relationship. Yeah. Other people, that's how they value themselves.
It's what they accept.
It's just everybody's kind of got a different idea what's their absolute limit.
Yeah.
You know, it could be maybe threatening their wings. It could be maybe laying a hand on them. You know, for some people, if they come from a background maybe where there's a lot of violence in the house, or maybe there's abusive behaviour at home, and then they end up in an abusive relationship, then they're blinded by the familiarity of what they've grown up with.
Yeah.
On some levels, now they know it's wrong. They know they don't like it. But on some levels, where does that have to escalate for them? They go, this is, I'm fucking out.
You
know, that's that. For you, say maybe for somebody else, it could be somebody shouting and roaring. It could be somebody smashing something. They go, I'm not fucking staying with somebody like that.
Yeah.
Or somebody in another relationship, they could be getting fucking kicked around the house before they finally maybe get to a point where they're like, this boy's going to kill me if I don't get out of this house. Or this woman, it could, you know,
does that kind of come back again to their own self-image? What they value themselves as, or what they're wanting to
accept? A lot of it, but then this is the thing about self-esteem that you have to look at, you know. If your self-worth is based on the other person and it's based on being in a relationship, take a damaging and toxic relationship, the longer you're in that environment, your self-worth and self-esteem gets diminished in nothing.
Yeah.
And then you don't feel like you can leave. Mm. Now, the other thing is, if the person has isolated you from your support network, you are totally dependent on this person in a lot of ways. And then there's this other thing, like with the bond and attachment to the person, and sometimes when they leave, they don't know how to cope on their own, and even though they know that's such a bad environment, they might end up going back in that environment. The person promises they change, and like on a lot of levels when I'm working with people, I'll be like, always look at the behavior. Yeah. What is the behavior showing you? What is the behavior teaching you? You know, I could promise you the sun, the moon, and the stars, I might fucking change. I might still be messaging 10 women.
Yeah.
You know, you have to trust your gut. And the part of the problem is, if you're in a toxic relationship, they're consistently showing you that your gut instincts are wrong. They're telling you, they're conditioning you to doubt yourself and doubt your reality, you know. So a lot of it's like building their self-esteem up, their self-worth, getting them to a place of what you would call congruence and being more authentic. So what you think, see, feel, and hear, you communicate.
Mm-hmm.
You allow yourself to be put first. You allow yourself to rock the boat with other people. You think about yourself before you think about them.
Yeah.
You don't ask permission. You know, and for a lot of us growing up, that's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, how do you find it? I always think with therapists especially, like, you're constantly hearing people's problems a lot. Like, you would hear even couples' problems. And I know maybe couples mightn't be as bad, but family therapy and even, like, bereavement and dealing with all that thing. How do you deal with yourself? Like, how do you deal with... your self-care.
Well, like, I have supervision as well. So, like, obviously, I'll speak in a therapeutic capacity about how everything's going with my supervisor and stuff. But for me as well, like, I have to have my own degree of self-care.
Aye.
You know, so, like, I would do a lot of BJJ. I would go to the gym and then...
Do you go to BJJ, aye?
No, I don't know. I let on. Like,
we were just speaking about this earlier, just so you know, that Rory's took over the whole calendar and...
The house.
There's no work things up on it. He rubs everything out just to put up his BJJ schedule.
Just to put up what I learned, and then I look back at it and go, oh, I forgot that.
Sorry, go ahead, bud. You were saying...
Oh, but that's it. Like, so self-care, like, what's your idea of self-care for you personally?
I don't have time for it. Now my self-care is just the time away from work. And even I try and work on myself.
Do you have an idea of self-care for you?
For me, it's kind of like good nutrition, training, looking after my mind, putting the stuff under my mind that I want to put on there, and try and keep myself away from stuff that I don't want that's not going to empower me, basically.
Everybody's idea is going to be a wee bit different. So it's like the environments that you find yourself in, so it'll be contextual. Like, so if I'm in a draining environment, or I'm around certain people and I'm taking on like their energy or their problems and stuff like that, and that could be your friends, it could be your family or whatever it is, you know, am I looking after my physical health, my emotional health? You know, am I allowing myself to open up about the things that's going on with me?
Yeah.
So like, if I personally, if I was taking on a lot of people's stuff, or there was stuff weighing heavily on me, am I dealing with?
Yeah.
Or is this affecting me and my behavior then? Like, that includes spirituality, it includes your nutrition, as you say. So healthy body, healthy mind, you're looking after yourself, you're getting enough rest, you're dealing with your stress. And then, like, goal setting and stuff, is my life moving in a positive direction?
Yeah.
Have I got an avenue that I'm looking to pursue here that matters to me? Now, this is another important thing. Sometimes we can get caught up in living our life for the expectations of our parents, for the expectations of our peers. I need to look a certain way, even for myself. Is this congruent to me?
Mm-hmm.
Or have I adopted this from someone else?
Yeah.
You know, do I have to be a fucking doctor? Where did I get that idea from?
Exactly.
And then that's part of what I work at as well, with the self-awareness. You know your expectations, what do you expect in a partner, what do you expect of yourself. Are your expectations of yourself even realistic? Are they too fucking high? You know, some people can cripple themselves with their expectations. Even anger. You know, if you're fucking constantly angry and you're losing head with people, you mightn't even know why, but obviously they're not meeting your expectations in some way. You're behaving in this manner. You know what I mean?
I know myself, even like falling into that trap where setting really, really like massive high goals and then just being completely overwhelmed with it, and just going all in and then forgetting about everything else and then 100%. Going, hold on, not something's going to break here. It's usually me or in a relationship or
and
something.
And self-esteem gets chipped away each time. Do you know what I mean?
I think everyone sitting around here is massively, we hold our businesses in high regard. I know you do take a lot of time out with BJJ and stuff, and you do work on that. But I would say definitely me and you were busy people properly. And we kind of spoke, I spoke at least even about self-worth. We attach it to our business. Like if our business is doing well, we feel fucking great. And if we take a dip on it, but realistically, the fucking businesses aren't us.
It's not your time.
What I mean. See, when I talk about self-care, I'll be like, if I can just take myself away from the business, I feel better in myself, because I'm able to work on even spending time with kids and spending time with Zina. And reading helps a lot. And as you say, I think we always do the nutrition and exercise.
You have to look at like the different, mix up the concept of self. Do you know what I mean? So your physical, your emotional, your nutritional, the contextual side of things, the spiritual side of things, and then there's another element like sensuality. How am I looking after myself in a sensual way? So three men talking about sensuality is going to be
I was going to say,
so that could be like getting a massage, like you've heard of that Danish concept.
Lisa's giggling there in the background.
I don't know how you pronounce it. Is it
sensual?
Haggy? I can't pronounce it, but it's like making your home kind of cozy, if you lighting candles or whatever it is. So like even wee small steps like that, or having a bath or something, just something that is relaxing. Like it could even be putting something on that makes you feel a wee bit more confident. You know, dressing to kind of maybe even lift your mood, whatever it is. That's all forms of your self-care in that respect. But like if you were looking at your life, right? If you were so overly focused on the physical aspect of your life that you were totally negating like your emotional side of things, your nutritional side of things, or maybe say the intellectual aspect or the contextual aspect is so domineering, like it's all work, or it's all career. You could look at that map and go, fuck, I haven't looked at this at all. I haven't vented about things that I'm dealing with. I haven't been taking care of myself. You know, what is spirituality to me? You know, is this important to me? Is this something that I've maybe lost sight of in my life? And especially for people coming out of relationships, a lot of the time we can be conditioned to have an idea of who we think we are. Or maybe over time our partner has conditioned us to think that we are a certain way. And it's about finding them elements of yourself that maybe you've lost within the relationship as well.
And I reckon even too within yourself that's where you kind of go out of balance, because if you're not kind of focusing on like the relationships and the spiritual aspect, it's just as well as your work and your business and your goals, that's where you kind of, you get out of sync and nothing, even the matter of you achieving your goals.
About the balance.
Nothing feels right. You might have achieved your business goals, but you don't actually feel content. You don't feel happy because you haven't focused on spirituality.
You change the goalpost, don't you? Like, and that's when it happens, when you get in that position. We go, shit, I'm not really that happy with our goals.
The expectations, like, you know, you could be a fucking high achiever, really, really big high achiever. But if you don't come to a place where you can accept and value yourself, even for who you are, your worth is always going to be conditional on that next achievement. Or how you're perceived. But then, as I say, if you're moving the goalposts, like you could be academically amazing, you could be amazing in business, but if you're in an environment then where you see somebody that's very confident and they're maybe very funny or maybe they're talented at something, if you go to that place of, I'm not like that, why am I not like that? And then you're starting to go to that place and then you're feeling bad about yourself, then again, that's something that has to be looked at and worked on. Now, we all have insecurities and stuff like that, but if that's a chronic recurring pattern for you, that's something that has to be addressed.
It doesn't matter what you're going to achieve, because you're never going to be content.
It's never going
to
be enough. That is ultimately, if you look at like the CBT model, if you're looking at like core beliefs, if you have a core belief of I'm not good enough, it's going to show in your behavior, and you're always going to be trying to disprove that for yourself. You know what I mean? It can it can also keep you stuck. It can stop you putting yourself forward, being seen, being heard. But also in terms of like academia, pardon me, academia and performance or even business, you're always chasing that next achievement. Yeah. Accomplishment.
Actually,
it's not what you're actually looking for.
No, I actually
you think it's there in that goal.
Well,
but
you
it's
want
not.
To be validated. Yeah. Else, like, I mean, sometimes what you can find even with families, like, and again, it's not a negative thing. We might look at this as a secondary benefit. If the only time we felt validated or got attention growing up by our family is if we performed and maybe done well at school.
Damn.
I might attach my worth to my education. I might have a fucking PhD at 30, and then I might be like, I'm not actually fucking happy. Yeah. I've fulfilled my work.
And that's where a lot of people fall. Because, as you said earlier, they're following their parents' beliefs, and they're, no, this is what you should be going after. And then they end up university, end up with a degree, and go,
it might not even be as blunt as that. It might never even be a conditional thing where they've sat down and had a conversation about their career path or anything like that. It might just be the case of, when I do well, I feel validated in this way, maybe by my family, and maybe I know they're proud of me.
Yeah.
But then that becomes the next thing. Oh, I'll get my master's, I'll get my PhD, I'll open my own business. And then it's a case of taking a step back and going, is this for me? Am I happy in my life right now at the moment? Have I loved my life for somebody else?
Yeah.
You know, is these expectations my own? And even again, as you say, about not meeting your expectations, that's about having a real kind of proper self-examination and going, what matters to me?
Yeah.
Where will I find fulfillment? What does fulfillment look like to me? Am I showing up as myself, my real self?
Yeah.
And even in relationships, I think, especially for like me and Lisa, I think what worked very well for us in the beginning was we aired all our fucking shit at the very start. We both got very vulnerable very early on. And we also were very clear about boundaries and what we did and didn't want. So it didn't leave any room for fucking
anything
about
else.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people are scared of vulnerability. They don't want to be rejected. They don't want to be hurt. They don't want to be feel like they're being humiliated or whatever it is. Especially for men, you know, that's like men conditioning. You don't show fear, you don't show emotion, you don't show sadness. Vulnerability is a military concept. You know, where am I weak? It's not a case of vulnerability, strength.
Yeah.
Because if I'm vulnerable with you, right, you're going to connect with me on an emotional level, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And if I can hold that space for you, you know then,
you feel comfortable.
I can speak to him. You know, he kind of gets me on that level. If you ever meet somebody that wears their heart in their sleeve, you can't help but warm up them because you know he's standing them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So vulnerability is a very powerful tool that you kind of have to show people. This is necessary for you to kind of connect on that level.
Yeah. And again, I suppose different cultures would be completely different than that. No, here's not a culture for that.
100%.
For sure. 100%. Nobody's allowed to be vulnerable and show their weak side, basically. Have you seen that even from moving around, that different cultures
some of the reading and the stuff I've been following online, there's a guy, Terry Real, and he was talking about, like, he deals a lot with, like, masculinity, depression. He talks about narcissism, grandiosity, especially for men, grandiosity and false empowerment, such a big thing, entitlement and all that kind of thing. But he was talking about even vulnerability in men. And he says, like, he had spent time in Africa with his tribe. And he says, like, the men hold hands when they're out walking about.
Yeah.
He says, it's not a thing that they're worried about. He says, you know, we're men. He says, but when we have to be emotional, we can do that with our partners.
Yeah.
He says, like, but people need to know that when we have to show up as men, we fucking show up as men.
Yeah.
You know, when you have to play that role, you play that role.
Yeah.
But you don't cut yourself off in that respect. Whereas in the Western world, boys don't cry. You know, fucking man up. Look at the language that we even use.
Yeah.
Look at sports teams in America. You know, you need to change your tampon. You know, stop being a pussy. Whatever the word is, the language is, it's degrading. It's all that kind of emotional disconnection. So if you look at it in terms of like gender roles, right? Women are kind of taught maybe to be less assertive. Don't be so, like, if a woman be assertive, she can be made out to be a bitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, why wouldn't you want your daughter to be assertive?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
To set boundaries, to be successful. Why shouldn't she be successful in a business role?
Yeah.
She's every bit as talented as a man, so why not?
Yeah.
Then again, for men, if your son was overwhelmed, would you not want him to be able to open up? So if we take that from a gender role, we kind of condition women to play small. We can condition them to be less assertive. And for men, we emotionally disconnect them.
Yeah.
And that's gender roles nobody wants. Nobody wants to be gender roles. Like, I think there's a lot of work. And I feel like in education, there needs to be more practical skills taught early on. Because some people don't have that template at school. They really, really don't. You know, they could be coming from a dysfunctional background and the only stability that they have is at school.
So
I think if they're taught, from a relationship perspective, you don't do this, you don't do that. You know, treat your partner with respect. What does the respect look like? You know, what is abusive behavior?
Yeah.
Because abusive behavior is a fucking huge, huge area and it encompasses a lot of things. Even since like the 90s, we've now got digital abuse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
so you see, like you mentioned in school, obviously there's massive, like, we're falling short there somewhere. So
and
if you could go
on
and change
teachers, it's on the system. Top down.
Yeah, of course. So if there was something there that you think would go on and change that? What do you think should be put in place? Obviously, there has to be an education around this type of thing.
100%.
Where there just isn't, like.
Right, yeah. But there's three men here sitting here. Has anybody ever sat down and spoke to you about how to behave in a relationship?
No.
Never. No. I've never even, like, and when's the one time people open up to you about relationships?
Never in dire
when
streets.
When it's bad?
Probably. Or in the pub when they're drinking.
Aye.
Because, again, it's socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they'll probably feel embarrassed about it because they were fucking blocked.
Aye. Yeah.
You know yourself, uh-huh. you can do in the door.
Mm. Exactly.
Stuff people might just blurt out.
Yeah.
But again, like, when you take it in the context of where can they get help, you know, even the stigma around men talking, like, I know people be like, oh, if you ever need help, come and speak to me. Does that happen? Do you know, do you show up in a way that they feel comfortable talking to you?
Yeah. That's out of the blue. Like, we're taught, as you say, and it's ingrained in us not to speak up, and then someone out of the blue goes, oh, by the way, you should talk up. It's like me just deciding to become a fucking therapist overnight.
Exactly, and that person probably doesn't even know you. They don't trust you.
A lot of it's holding space to you. A lot of it's holding space. Like, do you ever find, like, even maybe in a family, like a far-out relative, or maybe even a friend of a friend, you're here and it's going through a tough time, and you're like, jeez, I never would have thought that, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because naturally, you don't know them that way.
Yeah.
They've a front up or whatever. But, I mean, in terms of what can be done, I think, like, especially with self-esteem, it's building the person up to a point where they're not afraid to be themselves. And like, when we go on the environments at school, you've got, like, bullying, you've got the education system, you're putting a lot of pressure on people very early on. You know, I think I'm kind of rambling a wee bit, I'm way off topic. What I was trying to say is, like, for us to be able to cope in relationships, we need to know what a healthy relationship is and what it looks like, not what we think it is.
Yeah.
You know, and again, we were talking about unconscious traits.
Yeah.
I might go on to a relationship with an idea of how I should be, and yet I might play out a mirror image in my parents' relationship without even knowing that.
Yeah.
But I mightn't play the role that I think I'm playing.
Mm.
I might think I'm being, like, I'm being a ball bag or whatever it is, or I'm always going to get my way.
Mm.
But I could be with a partner who might be, like, very like my mother, or very like my father.
Yeah.
And again, it's them traits.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. And it's about learning. Again, it's the dance. It's
the awareness of them.
The awareness of what needs to change.
That's a massive part. Like, and everybody's, and I think, like, taking a step back and asking some questions of yourself, is that something that you would get people
the self-awareness side? It's the big side. How, like, I mean, even growing up, how's intimacy shown in the home? How's intimacy shown to me in that respect? You know, did I feel comfortable enough to be able to speak up and talk about certain things? And it's not about administering blame. This is about self-awareness. It's about looking and going, right, this is where I can see where things fell short, and this is where I can see where things have to change. Now, you look at your parents, you look at your grandparents. Your parents might not have them resources themselves. Mm. They're doing the fucking best they can. Most people's parents are doing the best they
can. Conditioning.
They bring you up and they're doing their best.
Yeah.
Now, as an adult, you might still be behaving from a place of, like, a childlike mentality in some regards with your idea of how things should be.
Yeah.
But, like, again, if I don't have a template of how to be intimate, and I mean intimate in more ways, like vulnerability, rather than just physicality, like, but I mean, that's all stuff that has to be looked at.
Yeah.
You know, do I even have that relationship with my parents where I could come up and speak to them about things that's on my mind on a deeper level? If I got a very shallow kind of connection with them, what has to change for that to happen?
Yeah.
And this is the scary thing. You take a system like a family or a relationship and you create change. You're the unknown elements. So there's going to be chaos. There's going to be anxiety, anger, fear. Mm. And a lot of times people push back.
Yeah.
And then you react the way you've always reacted.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's the thing about the dance. You're trying to set a new pace, a new tone.
That's
you're trying to
gonna be chaos
set that standard.
Time.
And what happens is the more you do it, that becomes the new norm.
Aye.
Yeah,
that's right. So what, like, could you give out some simple advice for anyone that maybe is struggling in a relationship? Like, what questions would they have to ask themselves, or what, you know, what even some steps that they might want to do?
Right, well, relationships as a whole, in a lot of ways, you have to look, am I happy? Am I fulfilled?
Right.
Can I see a future with this person?
Would you get them to write these down, Roy? I'm just out of listening.
It's going to be different person to person,
okay,
given the context. But I mean, am I happy? Am I fulfilled? What has to change in order for that to happen?
Yeah.
Am I getting what I want in this relationship? Am I treated like an equal? Do I feel loved, valued, respected, accepted?
And that's your kind
what
of...
What else can I, would I be looking at?
So, well, like, even...
A starting point would just how they're feeling.
Yeah.
No, like, how they're... If they're not content, if they're not but feeling, you know yourself, like, happy and...
A lot of things can take over, you know, within your life, like running after wains, and then you've got your work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, course, some people 100%. Don't have the time. They physically come in and check, aren't they, where they're at?
Mm.
But, I mean, like... That's a very important starting point. Am I happy? Am I fulfilled? What has to change in order for this to happen?
Yeah.
If it's because of the partner's behavior, now this is a very, very big part of it. Like, if the partner's behavior is detrimental and impacting on your self-esteem, are they likely to change? Are they likely to work on things?
Yeah.
Or if I have invested a lot of time in this person, say it's the person's in front of me, and I can see the growth and they're trying to set these boundaries, and it's still not getting better. Bring it back to, well, what can I control?
Yeah.
I'm like, so much of the time we spend hoping that the person will change and the empty promises and all the rest of it. What's the fucking behavior showing you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does this person respect you? Oh, but you know I love you. I bet your dog me every weekend. You know I love you. I bet you degrade me. You humiliate me in front of my family. You know, you belittle my ambitions. You belittle my hopes and dreams. What the fuck, like?
Yeah.
And some people don't actually sit, take a step back and look at this and go, this is really fucking affecting me.
Yeah.
They just know something's maybe something's not right.
No, that's right.
And this is the thing. The problem's not always the problem. It's how we're coping. So you can set a boundary with this person, but he can also choose to leave. He can also choose to just tell you to fuck off. And again, it comes back to, what can I control?
Yeah.
Am I going to stay in this environment that I want to put up with this for the rest of my life? Do I want my children exposed to this? They're all choices, and it's about empowering the person to make more responsible, empowering, positive choices that's going to allow them to live life in a way that's true to them, with somebody that actually loves, values, and respects them.
Yeah.
And it's, sometimes it's hard, because you might be with a person 15 years, you could be married.
Yeah.
But a lot of people that have come out of them damaging relationships, after maybe a year, they're like, I can't believe I spent so much time with that person. You know, I feel like I've wasted it.
They're but then,
they have a new lease of life then, because their life's their own.
Of course. Do you feel like maybe, we've talked about the digital age and social media and stuff, do you think that set any unreal expectations in terms of couples?
100%. And it's never been easier to cheat. It's never been easier to be sneaky. It's never been easier to be controlling. Like, you think 15 years ago, you weren't worried about somebody filming you doing something.
No.
Like, even for women, it's scary. Like, the shit people get away with. Like, if you leave me, I'm going to send this video you to your mother, to your work, to your friends. You don't think people do this. They do. Do you know what I mean? And that's, again, controlling, manipulative, toxic, degrading behavior. And some people are
that
trapped.
That keeps them trapped from it.
And now the law and all is changing around this, but people still don't care. You know, that's still so damaging. And that's, again, the education needs to be clearer, with, even at an earlier age. You don't do this to people.
Yeah.
You know, this is never, ever acceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sure. I think with, like, social media and stuff.
So even for yourselves, is it something that you'd like to do yourself, or maybe go in and around schools and start to educate children?
I would like to, I think, to be honest, like, in terms of self-esteem, you know what it's like being a teenager? It's tough. Like, it's tough anyway. But I think, like, if you had a resource there where people were maybe more focused on healthier ideas of coping, you know, that whole idea of congruence and authenticity, being yourself. Like, obviously, bullying in the school environment is very difficult in order to break that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if somebody's showing you that it's important for you to say how you feel, they say what you're really thinking, not what you thought. What's that there? They say what you think and feel, not what you think you should think and feel.
Do you know
sometimes you'd be like, oh, maybe you've adopted somebody else's expectations, and you start, like, for somebody even just to know that it's okay to put themselves first, but it's okay to do something, like, without having to ask permission. Now, I don't, obviously, you're not going to go and fucking steal a car or something, like, but I mean, ask, like, oh, I want to go and sign up to a gym, or I want to go and book a holiday or something, and you're not, like, having to run past somebody, or a career change or something, you know, just simple things like that. I think that's important, because, again, you might not have the template at home. And it's, I think it would be very empowering, I think.
Definitely.
Like, that lady that taught me there in Canada, she would have worked in mediation as well. And she was saying, in the area where she's from, before you can get put forward for mediation, as a couple or as a family, you have to go through so many weeks of family therapy. And they have something like a 94% success rate once they've taught them the tools that they need. Because it's, again, the problem isn't the problem. It's how they're coping. And that also includes the self-awareness from both parents about what has to change. Maybe even if you take it like as a primary triad, mother, father, child, you know, you, that's also a triangle. Yeah. So you can have a drama triangle there as well, with one person being played off the next, rather than an inclusive circle where everybody's needs is being met.
It's really good, hey?
So it's really fascinating how, like, it's personally personal, family to family, you can get sucked in. Like, you can really get sucked in. If you even go back intergenerationally, you go, like, your generation now with your parents' family, back to your grandparents' family, see the level of empathy and respect you can develop for your parents based
on what they went through.
Grandparents.
Aye. Knowing
you look
it was
at
theirs.
All the coping.
Yeah.
Like, if you take maybe 30s, 40s Ireland, people were getting it up a fucking teeth. You know, you, a man was a man. But then, you look back then, a man could have been fucking battering his wife around the house.
Of course,
so you might have had a very strong mother or grandmother, right? But she might have just learned that the best way to cope is to keep him sweet. Say nothing. Be nothing. Don't be seen or whatever it is. And then that could have trickled down then.
Of course.
Muller.
There's going to be some sort of effect there no matter what.
My mother was born in 1939. My dad was born in 1937. There's 16 in my mother's house. My dad was the oldest of the nine.
There's no TV in there,
Their conditioning is completely different, obviously. As you say, it's a trickle effect. The patterns that they repeat and the things that they see and how they're able to deal 100%. With their own situation.
That's
how they think they should bring up a family, basically.
But even historically, right? Historically, what was going on in the 30s? What was the conditions? And then what was going on even when your mother was born? What was going on? How many was in the family? You know, what was her role in the family? How did she
survival mode?
So you might have had, say, maybe three or four. She might have had three or four older brothers. They might have been very headstrong, domineering. They might have been aggressive or whatever it is. Maybe for her to cope, she placated them. Then she ended up with a partner. Maybe she might have placated. Who might have been very headstrong, very domineering, or she might have seen how her brothers got their way. She might have became a blamer herself, very headstrong, very assertive. And maybe she's domineering now in her relationship. She might be going with somebody that's very, very placating. But again, that's also something that might need to be changed, because she mightn't necessarily get what she needs from that relationship. Because even with blame, there's distance. You know what I mean? So, like, even it might be dysfunctionally functional. It might work in that way. Because one person's needs is being met. But things need to change for both people. They feel more connected and happy.
As you say, I think even for myself, like, the more I'm reading and studying and stuff, it's just getting that basis of understanding. No, this is the tools that they had. Or who anybody, this is the tools that they had to deal with. And that's what they knew, and this is what they seen, this is what they seen life to be like.
Empathy, man, it's really exactly about that, isn't it?
See, empathy, vulnerability, and just being authentic and congruent. It's so fucking important. You know, even just to be true to yourself, it's intimidating for a lot of people, like, because again, you can be rejected, you can be humiliated or hurt, but you have to do it in spite of that. And when you do that in spite of that, especially with your partner, if they really meet you on that level, the relationship flourishes, I think, in a lot of ways. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. Everybody's going to have their shit and their hiccups and stuff like that, but about with that level of self-awareness, you aren't reacting, you're in a place of here and now. You're aware. That's about being congruent. So, like, if you're losing the plot with me, I might go, look, not doing this right now. I'll come back in another time. We'll talk about it then. You know, maybe flying off a handle or whatever. Like, look, when you calm down, we'll talk about this. I'm just not doing it.
Takes a wee bit of time to take a step back, because it's instinct almost, because it's born
this
in
this. The established norm. Like, if he's used to flying off a handle, me caving, and I'm like, he might double down. He might say something that he knows is going to get a reaction. So for me then, it's about being congruent in the face of incongruent behaviour and trusting that this is the way forward. I have to set this boundary and the standard. And that's very difficult with the family unit, say in your own family, say it's with, if you're setting boundaries with your parents or your siblings or whatever it is, they know you better than anybody else, and they know how to push your buttons. And you have to stay strong in spite of that. And nobody's perfect. You will fuck it up. Like, you will make mistakes over and over and over again when you're setting boundaries. But you have to stand by them. And even if it means tears and tantrums for six months. And once that new standard's set, everybody starts feeling a wee bit better. Because they know what's expected, and they know what's going to be tolerated.
And everybody's obviously winning from the back of that.
But then this is the thing about, some people need to give up a wee bit of power as well. Like, I mean, if you're always seeing everybody else before yourself, they have to keep the fucking program over time.
Surely in the long run, it's going to benefit them too. If someone is dominant,
they start doing stuff changing themselves as well.
They're going to benefit. So there's going to be a breaking point somewhere.
Of course. But then again, this is the whole concept of choice. You have a choice at the end of the day. They have a choice as well. And if they want to throw the dummy out, let them. You know, you can't control their behaviour. You can only take account of yourself. I mean, the other side of it as well, you kind of touched on it earlier, like with conditioning, shoulds, the judgments, the family rules, whether it's explicit or implicit, if it was implied or basically said, don't talk back to your mother, don't do this, don't do that. Like you said earlier, she shouldn't have.
Yeah.
But that's your expectation, your rule.
Yeah.
It mightn't be the case for her.
Of course.
You know what I mean? So you might be losing the plot and she's like, what the fuck's this boy's problem? You know what I mean? And that level of self-awareness again, especially for like people that are maybe chronic people pleasers or placators, when they look at the rules, they can see how actually restrictive that they are.
Yeah.
And they're only guidelines. It's about changing them from rules to guidelines and realizing it's not black and white. There's shades of grays.
Yeah.
There's exceptions to every rule that's there.
Mm.
So for me, like, a lot of it growing up was about anger, losing your temper. And I had a lot of conflicting feelings with it. So if I'd have lost my temper, I'd have felt guilty about it and horrible about it. But sometimes you need to be able to say no.
Yeah.
And be assertive.
Yeah.
And you were saying, like, you know, sometimes I'd be a people pleaser, but maybe if you did, maybe tell somebody when you're at a breaking point to fuck off, you probably felt horrible about it.
Aye. Massively. Especially, you know what I mean? Even doing the door, I would have felt so guilty, like, if we got in baller, like.
But that guilt then stemming from you feeling like you've done something wrong, breaking a rule. But in that instance, it needed to happen.
Yeah.
Aye. It's hard to tell yourself that too, like, when this, you're this it's born
work.
Indie.
This is the work you're looking 100%. At it for what it is. You're not judging it.
No.
You're trying to learn from it and change it.
That's right.
You know, and it's hard. It's hard for anybody to do that. And as you say, most people won't go through the whole steps that they need to go through because they do really have to dig deep and actually really change a lot of things.
For me, like, when I put myself through, when I was getting trained in the model, I wanted to feel what it would be like for the person.
Yeah.
So I had a look at it, whether it was like warts and all.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a lot of it was very overwhelming, and it was good that I had them therapists and the resources there to get me through it. But what I have found with the work that I'm doing, when somebody commits to it and they have went through the whole program from start to finish, the fucking change I see in them is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's not a testament to me.
No,
it's a testament to the actual work on the program and how effective it is.
Yeah.
And like, it's mad. It's crazy. Like, when I see the difference in somebody over maybe 6 months to a year, I'm like, that is amazing. Like, I think it is. And it's the most rewarding part of the work. Like,
Like, funny, this is the most sensible conversation I've ever had with Rory. Like, me and Rory just go friends. And see, when I go back to self-care now, I'm thinking, I think I know what Rory's self-care is. Talking shit to me on the phone. And my self-care is him actually giving me advice and therapy. I'm thinking, now my phone calls with him are really him, like, having a therapy session with me.
Yeah.
It's free as well, so.
It's grand. Like, I mean, for like, but then again, see, even just phoning somebody up and having just a conversation about where you're at and what's going on, and it just being something other than that. Again, that contextual environment of always been working, always been a standalder. It's like,
right.
It's going to be goofy as well.
Mm.
But I mean, if you, like, with social media, we've never been more disconnected.
That's right, man.
And I had this conversation with Marty. Like, I'm living in London. I'll be coming up now in a year. I don't really, because I advocate very strongly for a support group. Have you got a group of people that you feel connected to that you can reach out to, whether it's your friends or family? Because me and Lisa are there and I get a lot from Lisa, and like, I have that support with her. It's also important for me to be able to grow my own right. So for me, BJJ, I have met a lot of people through that. I feel like I have a bit of a community element with that. I have the sports element of the fitness, but I also feel like I'm a part of something. So you know yourself with personal development, you like to feel significant. You like to feel like you have a connection to something bigger than yourself. And that even for some people can be spirituality, something bigger than yourself. It doesn't have to be, pardon me, religious or Christian or whatever it is. So for me, that is a big part of my self-care, even just getting out of the house and being down there for a few hours and chatting with people from different cultures and training and all the rest of it. And that does me a world of good. Look,
actually, you do get caught up. The social media thing is massive, and like, even listening to Gary Vee, I read a post, it was actually someone else on my Facebook page put it up, about hustle, constantly fucking hustling, he loves this whole hustle element. And then He had a post up on anxiety and how do you cope with anxiety. And funny, one of his rules was, you're to blame for everything, basically. So if anything's going on, the buck stops with you. And that is, I was thinking,
the thing is
surely that's going against everybody. If you've got anxiety, that's probably why you fucking have it.
In a lot of ways, you're trying to control an outcome.
Aye, that's it.
You know, when you feel like when you can't cope and you're out of control,
yeah,
that's even if you're anxious.
Yeah, aye, that's it.
But I mean, That's a whole different ball.
But he's like he is hustle, hustle, hustle. But then he openly says as well too, he takes his breaks and he knows to pull back and he has to do it because he can't hustle when he needs to hustle. If he doesn't do that, so I think he neglects
self care. Of course,
he neglects putting that out. But he's hustle, hustle, hustle. But he doesn't tell you about the times that he steps back and does his self care.
We get caught up in that, especially people like me, in a way that is so interested in growing his business and blah blah blah. And I'm looking up to people like him. I start reading more in depth into what he's saying. I'm like, fuck
no, man, you can't even be anywhere near what he's doing. You don't have his resources, and it's just you don't have the business that he has, you don't have everybody that supports him.
If you look at it like this, right, if you were hanging around with people that were draining you, what do you have to do?
Exactly.
Stop hanging around with them. If you're at home on your phone
and
you're trawling through, like, I am so guilty of this at times, just like out there scrolling and I'm not really paying attention, I'm digesting all that shit. And I'm not going to get into this whole idea of, oh, it's fantasy, right? Fair enough. Even if it wasn't, and that somebody's having a great life, what is me absorbing all that doing for me?
You know what I'm doing for my mind?
I might come in nagger or whatever it is, and I might be sitting in my bed and I might just be trying to kill 5 minutes. I could see something that could trigger something in me. Now, that's nobody else's responsibility but mine. But if I am putting myself looking through this stuff and I see something that maybe hits an insecurity with me,
I did a talk in St. Mary's School and it was exactly the same thing. It says, no, what you're watching on TV, what you're watching on social media, all the stuff that you're putting under your brain, basically, and you're interpreting this as real and how it's actually affecting you and your behaviours and your outcomes.
Right, you limit yourself
from those things.
You know yourself with bodybuilding, right? You know how damaging that can be to somebody if they don't actually look at the long term effect of it on the body image. I've spoken to you about this before. It was something I really struggle with at the start. I used to think, like, if you take, for men, maybe when I get up to this weight, I'll feel a wee bit more at myself, right? And then it sure never ends. And you 4 stone on you, and you're like, when I get up to 18 stone, you know. No, for me, in a lot of ways, like, when I look at social media, I could see maybe, like, if I even seen somebody fighting now, like, I'm kickboxed now, I probably couldn't be asleep. I haven't kickboxed now since, like, 2011.
Yeah.
I could see somebody fighting and been like, Jesus, I had fucking empty hands. Why did I ever give that up? You know, I should never give that up. I've had so many brilliant experiences in my life. But I'm still holding myself to that standard. And that was something I seen on my phone.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bothering me up to that point. I was just sitting in the house happy as though I opened my phone. Oh, did he want a belt?
Why do you think
I could beat him?
I could batter him. That sounds conceited. Not like, oh, I could batter him, but like,
I should go back and do that.
And then I'm out running like Rocky in the morning. I don't even want to be doing it.
Yeah.
But that's coming from my insecurity. I should just look back at that and go, fair play to him. And I do, but it's that ego. The ego comes in.
Your insecurity is that you're not fighting anymore and you know you can do pretty good things. No, but you know what I mean?
You know what you're capable of.
Yeah, that's it.
This happened. Do you remember that happened to me before the British Championships? I was back boxing and I was adamant that I was taking a fight.
I remember.
And I was in Raw, everybody was training. I was chatting with somebody and they were like, oh, I'm going to Brits. And I was like, I'm going to fucking Brits. She had bought me new gloves and everything. Was back boxing. Wasn't even back boxing a week. 4 days.
And I think
by the time it came to that Friday, I came in, I had a PT client, and I came in going through the session. I could see everybody doing drop sets, and I was like,
yeah.
I went over and I, oh, how's it going? And I was like, getting ready for the rest. And I was like, to her, I'm fucking going.
It's the same. Like, maybe we were talking about a few years back, I wanted to do the BMBF, a national show in England. And I got there about 8 weeks out, and my ma came to the house, and I never even spoke a word there. Went straight up the stairs, went to my bed, came back down, she was gone. I went, what am I doing? But again, it's that, and it's nearly like an insecurity.
It is an insecurity.
You see everybody competing, you're like, I want to compete again.
Well, we judge and compare based on that.
We're going for that place of, am I good enough?
Thinking that you're going to get a reward from it.
No, again, I could reframe that, and I could look back and I go, right, well, you won the World Championships when you were younger, you won an Irish title, whatever. It is for some people, that's all that they ever want, and then again, it's about me being realistic with myself and going, you made that decision that you weren't going to continue with, you know, you've done other things, but for some people, they don't get that place of self awareness, and it's just a constant moving the goalposts, moving the goalposts.
It's again, I suppose, it's what people's values, they just change, like, don't they? You know, what you valued when you were younger was that, and now it's completely different.
But that
where
could
you're
also
at
be contingent in your peers, do you know what I mean? You take even this has got a whole different conversation, you even take fellas maybe that are running from woman to woman to woman to be seen to be a ladies man or whatever it is. And if that is your role model or your influence or your behaviour, you can see how that can trickle down onto somebody's mindset and attitude. Or if you had a parent that was maybe like that, you could see that playing out in your relationships. Because again, what you see and what you start to maybe act out. So I don't know. Like for me, like some of the people that I surrounded myself with when I was younger were a big influence on the fighting yeah. side of things, but also sure. like if you've been bullied and stuff like that, yeah. Yeah. again, what can I control? I can yeah. harden up, I can train, I can mm-hmm. start to look after myself. Mm-hmm. So
massively.
Yeah. What's next? Teaser back to London. Today.
And also, where can people find you? So we had mentioned
me on Instagram, Happy Hole. I think there's, what do you call them? The underscores. There's an underscore in there somewhere. Happy underscore hole underscore.
That's hole
with a
hole.
Hole with a W.
W H O L E.
He was holding
a hole. It's not a hole. It's a play on words. It's happy and hole. Right, yeah. which we all want to be. We want to feel complete. We want to feel whole.
No, but then
my dad will call me Happy Hole sometimes. Well, they're Happy Hole coming on now. That's something else altogether. Like,
fascinating. Excellent thoughts. Brilliant. Love that.
It really was. Really and thanks for coming on. And 100%. By the way, Lisa and Rory just got engaged there.
Brilliant. Congratulations.
Was it last week? Wait, 2 weeks ago, was it?
No, the 30th of December. I know.
Fucking
2 weeks ago.
That's ridiculous.
You're in a time warp.
I am. You don't show me. I work too much.
About that's 2 weeks ago, over on the 30th of December.
I said that the other day, do you mind? I was like, you're all, what age are they? And I was like, same age as me. What age is that? He's like, 18, 19. 18 and about fucking, you know what I mean?
Like,
10
years.
Grey, white. 18.
12 years. So we just want to congratulate them anyway.
Thanks
on their.
Much.
Yeah. And they were back here and they had a wee surprise party there, engagement party.
Good weekend.
Where did you get engaged? You want to tell people where you got engaged? Where the romantic boy done it?
I'll take this one.
Yeah, you will.
So basically, I had been planning it for about, I would say, two years and a half. Like, so we would travel quite a lot, so I had to kind of do it in a way that she wouldn't have twigged on what was happening. So I booked her a holiday in Iceland, and it was on, she always wanted to stay out in a wee kind of bubble in the woods. Brilliant. You know, the see-through domes and stuff. So obviously I booked that, I inquired about that, and then because my 30th was coming up, I had to get her on side so she wouldn't plan on taking me anywhere away. Mm-hmm. So I had to get my man on the ball, and I was like, look, make sure she doesn't book anything for me or we're not going away anywhere. I'll kill you, like, I will kill you. It's like 2 years of planning, don't fuck this up, like. And then I had to figure out the ring and get the ring sized and all that kind of crack. So because it was booked for the day before New Year's, and what did they spend New Year's Eve in Reykjavik, because we'd went 3 years before and it was good crack, like. So we went out and we'd done a day tour, and then that evening, and then we got to the dome. But the fucking, I'm not going to ruin it. We got to the dome anyway. So you see, the weather wasn't what I wanted it to be, put it like that. But we got that done that night and everything was going well. And, like, she had a fucking, you didn't have a clue, like, did you? She got really emotional, so it was nice. Like.
Brilliant, hey?
But, it was deadly, hey? Class. It was good, I was happy with how it went, like. And
we stayed in the wee domes there a couple of weeks ago in Funlock. Brilliant.
Aye. Ah, they're amazing. Class, they're amazing. We was out in the woods, like.
We were out in the woods, aye.
It's class. We were looking up at the stars and all, and you have all these big trees around you, and it was really, really
We had a clear night
like.
As well. It was amazing,
hey? You and did it, up and see them.
You had wrote in your diary, Lisa, in the 2015 that you
seen that last night, aye. I seen that last night. She had a wee goal on a bucket list thing.
Yeah. Brilliant, hey?
Yeah,
I just remembered that conversation from years ago, and I was like, right, I'll definitely make sure I'll take her there sometime. And then I put two and two together then with the engagement. I was like, nah, if I'm going to do it, that'll be memorable. Do it like that. So it was what happened then. Like.
Brilliant.
Hi.
Super.
Quality.
And by the way, thanks for coming on. And I know you took time out of your busy schedules because you're flying away today. So appreciate it. Like,
100%.
And hopefully, we'll get Lisa on at some stage if she.
Yeah.
Happy days.
Excellent.
Guys, thanks for listening. And tune in. I think next week we have Pierce on. Or is it this week?
This week, guy.
Yeah,
this week we've got one of our guys from Elevate, Pierce McNearney, sharing his story, how he went from about to quit as a personal trainer and within 4 or 5 months opening up his own studio and loving it.
Cool.
Basically. All good.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Elevate.